did more than I.
Well, hello, Mayor.
Hi, Mr. President. How are you?
I'm good. So the mayor is on official city business out of the state. His failure to participate in today's council session would jeopardize the public interest, health, safety, or welfare. Therefore, unless there is an objection by any member of the council, the mayor will participate in today's hearing by teleconference. Both Commissioner Leonard and Fish were provided the opportunity to also appear by teleconference or other electronic communication, and both are unavailable to participate. So hearing no objection, sounds like Carla already has the mayor on the line to participate. So do you need to call the roll, I guess, first? Okay.
Leonard? Fritz?
Here.
Fish? Saltzman?
Here.
Adams?
Here.
Okay, and before we begin, I would like to make a motion to accept amended Exhibit A.
I should read the title first.
Oh, I'm sorry. Read the title first.
Item 886, refer amendments to the City of Portland Charter, Chapter 5, Fire and Police Disability Retirement and Death Benefit Plan to the November 2012 general election ballot.
Thank you. I would now like to make a motion to accept amended Exhibit A. There are no language changes contained in this amendment, only structural and formatting corrections.
Second.
Okay, a second. Okay, Carla, could you take the roll call on the vote, please?
Fritz?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye. So this evening we have before us a resolution to refer a charter amendment to the voters of Portland in the November election regarding the Fire, Police, Disability, and Retirement System, otherwise known as FPDNR. In 2006, voters overwhelmingly approved comprehensive reforms to the FPDNR system. And one of the major reforms was to create a smaller board of trustees with meaningful citizen representation. The Board of Trustees has recommended the majority of the changes contained in this amendment for Council's consideration to refer to the November 2012 ballot. Ultimately, however, it is the City Council's purview to decide what charter amendments are referred to voters. This amendment respects the commitment to provide fair and reasonable retirement and disability benefits to our police officers and firefighters, while at the same time being accountable to the taxpayers of the City of Portland. As a report just released by the City Auditor finds, 26 cents of every property tax dollar is now being spent on the FPDNR system. The combined effect of this amendment will save the taxpayers of Portland a minimum of $46.6 million over a 25-year period, contributing to the overall financial health and solvency of the fund. So to provide an overview of the proposed charter amendment, is the Director of the Fire, Police, Disability, and Retirement System, Linda Jefferson, and the Chair of the FPDNR Board of Trustees, Yvonne Deckard. Welcome.
Thanks.
Linda, you're going to start.
Good afternoon, Commissioner Saltzman, Commissioner Fritz, and Mayor Adams, or good evening, Mayor Adams. I have prepared a brief presentation this afternoon on the concepts that have been introduced in the resolution. I thought I would start out by sharing with you what the objectives were in going into this process. We wanted to address the recommendations resulting from the Charter Directed Disability Program audit. That was the 2006 reform directive that there be a disability audit and then a follow-up audit. So there were some issues that came out of the audit that were recommended as changes to the program. So that was one part of the consideration for us working through this process. There were additional concepts that had been proposed prior to and beyond the 2006 reforms. So some of these were issues that were considered by the former board, in fact, and by the board post-reforms. And we wanted to improve the clarity in specific sections of the charter, and that's been an aspect that's of greatest interest to staff because we want to make sure that we are applying benefit provisions consistent with the charter's intent. And finally, to decrease the taxpayer-funded liability. So just to share with you briefly our background and methodology, beginning in 2007 through 2010, the FPDR staff did develop a list of recommendations. In October of 2010, the FPDR Board of Trustees had a work session where they reviewed the staff's recommendations. And following the work session, the board did direct staff to conduct some research and kind of do a financial analysis of what the impact would be of moving forward with the recommended changes. From November 2010 until April 2011, the staff and two of the board members met with labor and other stakeholders to discuss their charter change concepts and related matters. So that was the charter change concept, concepts of labor and the other stakeholders to the plan. And in from June 2011 until April 2012, the Board of Trustees analyzed and discussed the staff and the stakeholder recommendations. And in April of this year, the board did adopt a list of charter change concepts that they then forwarded on to you for consideration. The projected savings of the recommendations that are being introduced to you today is a total of over $46 million reduction in the taxpayer liabilities over a 25-year period. So beginning with the first concept that is being introduced is the recommendation to change how final pay is calculated when determining an individual's retirement benefit. What's been recommended is to change the calculation to a factor that is based on the highest of any three consecutive 365 or 366 days period where the most recent day is the last day for which the pay was received in the calendar month preceding the calendar month in which the FPDR2 member retires, dies, or otherwise terminates benefits. What had happened post-reform is that the Board of Trustees had adopted some administrative rules that had resulted in a change in how the benefits were calculated and ultimately resulted in there being an increase in benefits over a period of time. Normally there's a 26 pay period consideration for city employees, but there have been some years, actually there have been three thus far, where there's been 27 pay periods, and that's resulted in an increased benefit to the retirees. So that was part of the incentive to go back and look at what would be the appropriate way to make the calculations that would be the the appropriate way, we believe, based on the intent of the charter. So the estimated present value, 25-year present value savings would be at least $40 million to the fund. The next section has to do with delaying the entry of new sworn fire and police members. Currently, individuals enter into FPDR program at the time that they're sworn in. We are recommending that entry be delayed for 6 months. During that 6 month period, there is coverage that would be available for any on the job injuries, and that's through the state's workers' compensation program. As you know, the city of Portland is self insured and self administered for workers' compensation, and there is, I believe, an adequate benefit coverage for individuals during that 6 month period. Of course, beginning with their seventh consecutive month of employment, they would at that time enroll into the FPDR program. I might add that this isn't an entirely new concept of City of Portland sworn employees being under the city's self-insured workers' comp program. In fact, beginning in the mid-80s, there were a number of agencies external to the city that were annexed into the City of Portland. I believe there were about five or six different agencies. And based on information that I still had available to me, at one point I think that number exceeded 25 both police and fire members who were PERS covered for retirement and therefore subject workers under the Oregon Workers' Compensation Program. The next issue has to do with vested terminations. Currently, there's a provision in the charter that provides that if there's any covered service that's under the Oregon Public Employees Retirement System that the individual has worked prior to or maybe subsequent to their employment with the City of Portland, that be factored in determining what their retirement benefit is, which of course can result in an increase of benefits. And what's been recommended by the Board of Trustees is that that consideration be removed from the charter because it's not really addressing what the fund's responsibility should be for service to these individuals to the City of Portland. If, in fact, this does move forward, we estimate that the 25-year present value is at least $0.3 million in savings to the fund. The next item is settlement. Currently, the City Council has the sole authority to authorize settlement to discharge any claims against FPDR. That was a new provision with the 2006 reforms. The recommendation of the board is that the administrator be given the authorization or the approval to settle claims as determined by the Board of Trustees in their administrative rule. So there's no financial impact should that move forward. The next item is to define FPDR 3 service as equivalent to FPDR to service. And that's just, I think, to provide clarity that there's the same consideration for those individuals who are FPDR 3 members as those who are FPDR 2 members when considering whether or not they meet the eligibility requirement for certain occupational disability claims that may be filed. Heart disease is a good example of that. There would be no financial impact expected for this change. The next item is base pay. The recommendation is to add language that allows for full-time pay to be calculated for part-time members. If there's an individual who, at the time that they make application for retirement, is in a half-time work status where they had previously worked a full-time schedule, and there may have been some time loss resulting from, for example, a disability, then it was determined that it would be appropriate and a fair consideration for these individuals to base their final pay based on full-time employment rather than part-time employment. The 25-year present value of this change has been estimated at $0.8 million. There are currently only four part-time members, and they all have a number of years to work before they reach their earliest retirement eligibility. The next recommendation is to just make a minor change in the charter that would allow for administration of disability benefits to members for service-connected and occupational disability benefits on a biweekly or a monthly basis. Currently, the charter allows for a biweekly benefit during the first year of disability, but if the member is disabled and eligible for a benefit after the first year, we can only make the payment on a monthly basis. And for example, there may be occasion that an individual needs to have some follow-up treatment. They've returned to work, but they may miss time to attend a doctor appointment or a few doctor appointments. And we have established a process where we coordinate our biweekly payments to go out at the same time as regular payroll, and it has really enhanced our ability to administer the benefit, and I believe it's been well received by the members on disability. So what we are asking is that we have the flexibility to make the payment when due, either on a biweekly or a monthly basis, depending on the individual circumstance. This is the same scenario with the non-service-connected disability benefits. Currently, there is no provision to pay a non-service disability benefit on a biweekly basis. The charter only provides for monthly payments currently. And again, it would just be not to increase the benefit, but to allow flexibility in making the payments when due. So there would be no financial impact to moving this forward. The next item is making payments of interim disability benefits during the period that an application for service-connected or occupational disability benefits is being considered for approval or denial of the claim. We have a process in place where an individual who is missing time from work and they filed a claim for FPDR disability benefits, they have to use their accrued leave, their accrued sick leave during that period prior to the claim's compensability determination. What we're recommending is that we pay an interim disability benefit similar to how it's done in the workers' compensation system. If the claim is ultimately accepted, then we would continue to make the disability benefit payments as appropriate. If the claim is withdrawn or denied, then the member would be responsible for repaying the amount of the disability payments back to the fund. We've already had communications with staff internally in both bureaus, as well as others who would provide support in that interface, and it is doable. There would be no significant fiscal impact. There may be a very rare situation where someone leaves city employment and then you may have to pursue recovery of that overpayment, but I see that as a very rare thing happening. We do have an approval rate of probably about 90% or a little more, so we're talking about a small number of cases where we would have to go through the process of recovering overpaid benefits to these individuals. The way that we make these individuals whole now is we go through a process called restoration of accrued leave. It is administratively cumbersome. It involves a lot of hands to make it happen, and to have this be a part of our way of doing business, I think, would be a win-win for everyone involved in the process, including the member. This next section is just a minor change. Currently, the language in this particular section, which deals with the medical and hospital expense coverage for approved service-connected and occupational disability claims. It talks about occupational injuries or illnesses rather than occupational disability claims. And while it's very clear to me today that the intent was that there be this provision for people who have approved occupational disability claims, which is a defined set of diagnoses, injuries, or illnesses, if someone new comes in tomorrow, they may see it a different way, and we want to make sure that is clear for anyone at any point going forward that that is an appropriate benefit for these particular claims. So there would be no fiscal impact for this change. And finally, the recommendation is to change the eligibility requirement for a non-service death benefit from 10 years to 5 years. We believe that this would be consistent with the different agencies that we have done research with, and it's normally tied with vesting. So, for example, if you have someone who is a day or two away from being vested, or maybe they've already been vested, but they are involved in a non-work-related accident, or they die of natural causes, and they're just a few days short of 10 years of employment. Currently, they are not, or their survivors are not eligible for the death benefit. And we just feel that, and the board feels that it would be appropriate to make that change. The estimated 25-year present value of making this change is estimated at $0.3 million. So that brings us to just a summary page of all of the recommendations and the value of moving these recommendations forward, and again with a net savings of $46.6 million, which is, we believe, a conservative figure. So that's the end of my presentation.
Okay,
do you have
thank
any
you.
Questions?
Chair Deckard. Welcome.
Good afternoon, I guess it's evening now. Yes, what I can say is that the board worked on these issues for quite some time. Since the beginning of the initial reform, we've worked with the fund manager and staff to look at how to streamline some of the administrative issues that we have, from bringing in adopting new administrative rules, but to also look at what are ways in which we can streamline the fund and that would better work for the members, as well as have some, hopefully, some potential cost savings. Of course, we've been discussing fund solvency. We still have some discussions to do in that arena, but certainly where we can have some cost savings, that is desirable for the board, and for we think it's good for the members, and we think it goes toward helping out with fund solvency as we move forward. You know, some of these things, as you notice, are we've added some minimum benefits, but we've maintained some savings. We do believe that all but one of these recommendations had unanimous support from the board. The only one that didn't was the last one, from moving from a change of 10 years to 5 years, whereas myself and Trustee Delaney, we felt that this made some sense, but we think that, you know, we were concerned about cost and just really adding without having some additional research. It does make sense. People are vested after 5 years. Any amount of years that you put in, you will have a situation where someone will bump up to that. But we do agree that if there has been someone that's worked for, 9 years or 9.5 years, to say that their beneficiaries have no benefits doesn't make a lot of sense. Whereas this was the only one that didn't get unanimous support, and I was one of those that didn't, I understand, you know, why it is in the best interest of, you know, for the fund to move in that direction. I'm going to hold any further comments that I have and until after we maybe hear from some other individuals.
Great. Any questions? Thank you very much. And, yeah, if you could both be available to come back up and answer questions. So as we have invited testimony from current trustee Justin Delaney, do we have other trustees here? I guess Bob, you're Bob Lemon, you're close enough to being a current trustee, although I guess you are a former trustee now. So if you wish to come up, this will be the time. Do we have any other trustees of the board here? Okay. So Justin, come on up. Bob, if you're welcome to come up too. So if you could just give us your name and who you represent on the Board of Trustees, I think would be great. Justin?
Commissioner Saltzman, Commissioner Fritz, Mayor Adams, my name is Justin Delaney. I'm one of the two citizen trustees on the FPDR board.
And my name is Bob Lemon. I'm the former fire trustee.
Go ahead, Justin.
Commissioners, I do not have any prepared comments other than to echo what Board Chair Deckard said. This was a long consensus building process for the most part. We had a number of stakeholder meetings and fits and starts, and the goal from our end on the board was to try to reach some consensus proposals that made sense to everybody. I think we've arrived at that. Otherwise, I'd be available for any questions, and I know you probably have other testimony, and I can be available to respond to that.
I would like to say that I would disagree with the chairman that this was a unanimous, except for the case of the non-service or the death benefit. We never discussed what is the definition of final pay now. It's changed since our discussion. It's no longer the month preceding. It's the first day is the last day of pay received. I've never discussed that, and we never discussed that as a board. And then we also had a discussion regarding the starting of the 6 months, but that was never settled, and 6 months was never, I don't know how you came to that figure, because it really has no meaning in the way our the fire system works, and I'm sure it doesn't in the system. 6 months is not any significant benchmark, and so I just wanted to clarify that that was not voted on. Those two things were not voted on by the board.
Commissioners, I would concur with Trustee Lemon that the six-month waiting period was not something that the board specifically addressed. I understand that was a more recent proposal.
Added by me. Okay, well, thank you both. Okay, now we'll move to public testimony. And Carla, who do we have?
We have three people signed up. Please come on up. Jim Forcore, Brian Parman, and Daryl Turner.
Okay, welcome. So if you could give us your name and affiliation, and you'll each have 3 minutes. And we'll start with Jim Fouquet.
Thank you. Excuse me. Thank you, Commissioner. Mayor Adams, Commissioner Fritz, Commissioner Salzman. We could spend a lot of time talking about the things that we disagree. I'd like to speak to what we all agree on. Nobody is more concerned with the solvency or long-term sustainability of the fund than the people that sit before you and the members that we represent. In fact, we do agree with a number of the proposals that have been placed before you that in some cases improve the long-term sustainability of the fund. The major concern that we'd like to speak to is the failure to be given an opportunity to discuss the proposals at the bargaining table. In some cases, the development of the proposals was promising but not mutual and inclusive on all of the major topics. The proper forum for these conversations, as agreed by city negotiators, is collective bargaining. Our concern continues to be the lack of stakeholder input and pretending that these proposals are not mandatory subjects of bargaining. We believe that this conversation does not have to be adversarial and continue to be committed to a collaborative process that gives our members a voice at the table. I'd just like to close with saying that we've been through charter review many times, and each of those times we've been through charter review, the fire unions and police unions have been at the table, and we've come to conclusions that went before the voters. And all due respect, Commissioner Salzman, you speak to the 80% voter approval. And I strongly believe that the reason that was so popular amongst voters was that because we were at the table and didn't oppose those changes when they came through. And as a result of those changes, we've identified several things that we would, I guess, say unintended consequences, I think is the term used, that have come up that we, again, are willing to sit down and talk about and identify a solution that benefits not just the members or the beneficiaries of the plan, but also protects the vested interest of the taxpayer who ultimately foots the bill for the firefighters and police officers that serve the city. Thank you.
Thank you. Brian?
Good evening. My name is Brian Parman. I'm the president of the Portland Police Commanding Officers Association. Commissioner Fritz, Commissioner Salzman, Mr. Mayor, I don't really have any prepared comments. I just wanted to sit here and support with the other two labor associations and just let you know that the PBCOA is committed to working with the city to resolve these issues, but we do believe that conversations that impact the benefits of the membership are best held at the bargaining table. Thank you very much.
Daryl?
Commissioner Fritz, Commissioner Salzman, Mayor Adams, I'm Daryl Turner, Portland Police Association President. Again, I echo the sentiments of my labor union partners. A lot of these are subjects of bargaining, and that's where they should be talked about, at the bargaining table. From the beginning, we stated that, and we asserted that to the FPDNR committee, and we still assert that. And I would hope that that's where we have those conversations, and that are they're collaborative. We want to obviously protect the solvency of this fund, but we also want to make sure that we're not coming back in 6 years or 4 years and redoing what we're doing right now. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you all. And is that it for signed up? Anybody else wish to testify? Okay, well, then we will close the hearing and move to the vote.
I'd like a response from Anna Kamwit, the HR director, on the concerns about whether this is subject to mandatory bargaining.
Okay. Well, we'll get Board of Trustee Chair Deckard and our Human Resource Director, Anna Kamwit.
I know. Kind of like old home week having Yvonne here. I appreciate that. Anna Kamwit, BHR. Let's see. You want me to address the comments that were made? Yeah, that's fine. Well, I think the position as a city has been that the portions of the FDNR plan, how that's configured in the charter, really is something that's up to the voters to make that decision on. So that has been our position on those issues.
Has that been tested in previous occasions?
Well, there have been some issues through the grievance process, yes. And there's an ongoing dispute over what is a mandatory subject of bargaining, which pieces fall within the charter and are up to the voters to determine. Yvonne can speak to the work that was done with labor and the communications that happened from the board and to labor on those issues.
And if this, and maybe this is a question for Commissioner Saltzman, if this is challenged in the courts and parts of it are found to be subject to mandatory bargaining, do the other parts go into effect, or does the whole thing fall apart?
I think I would direct that to
one of our attorneys.
Yes. Is there severability?
Yeah, I think that's a question that Ken should address. What the board is clear on is that our fiduciary responsibility as the board is to really look at the be fiduciaries of the fund, and we don't bargain with labor. We have no bargaining authority for the fund with labor. Our position is that we work collaboratively, or we try to, but it's really to really manage and be good fiduciaries of the fund, and we see that this board, just as previous boards in the past, felt that the board and the FPDNR was a separate and is a separate entity. And so what I can tell you is that currently, and I guess Anna can tell me if I'm correct, there isn't anything in any of the labor agreements that talk about FPDNR, and there isn't anything in the charter that gives the board the authority to bargain with labor. It is the board's duty to really set when someone is a member, just as the PERS board decides when someone becomes a member. And so the board is making recommendations as fiduciaries of the fund and not as the bargaining agent of the city.
Right. And it seems to me that you have done your due diligence on being fair and providing benefits in this. So there's parts of this package that actually provide more cost to the system and benefits to the beneficiaries, as well as the ones that provide cost savings. So what I'm wondering is, with the benefits, and maybe that isn't a question for the attorney.
Well, yeah, I think the question is, okay, should these amendments be approved by voters, or this amendment, and a provision is challenged in court and struck down, do the other provisions of the amendment remain?
Good evening. Ken McGarrett from the City Attorney's Office. What I understand the question to be is if a grievance is filed under the collective bargaining agreement. So my answer would be that we're dealing under the collective bargaining agreement, and therefore that provision would likely be severable from the whole of the charter reform. So it doesn't sound like a court case that would involve the legality of the actual ballot measure, but rather a grievance under the collective bargaining agreement, and we've had those ongoing now, as Anna mentioned, for a couple of years. So I think it would be severable.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you all. Okay, let's move to the vote.
Fritz?
Commissioner Salzman, I very much appreciate your ongoing attention to this issue. It's obviously of concern to all taxpayers and to all beneficiaries that this program provide the benefits that have been promised to our firefighters and police officers who every day put their lives in harm's way. And when injured on the job or with death benefits, deserve proper compensation. It's also, it seems to me that this package is further delving into what you have done in the past with previous charter amendments in making sure that we do reflect the responsibilities to all parties. And so I'm pleased to vote aye.
Adams?
Well, I honor the work of our police and fire partners, and we have been aggressive during my time as an elected official with the leadership of Commissioner Salzman to make sure that we are continuously improving this program and that it remains financially sound. I think that while we might have, while there might be some concerns about process, I have not heard a compelling reason not to move this forward for the voters to consider. And so I'm pleased to do that today. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, as I said in the introduction, I think this amendment does respect the commitment to our provide fair and reasonable retirement and disability benefits to our police officers and our firefighters, and at the same time being accountable to Portland taxpayers. And also keeping in mind that we enacted major reforms in 2006 to address fund solvency. Those amendments take time to work their way through the system, as it takes, those amendments took effect in 2007, so there's still a lot of people out there that are covered under our pension fund that have yet to be retired. And so it'll take time for those benefits to work their way through the system. I think these amendments move in the direction of addressing fund solvency, but also being fair and accountable to our city employees. I'd like to thank the members of the Board of Trustees, Chair Deckard, Justin Delaney, David Dougherty, Jeff Nelson, and former trustees Jeffrey Robinson and Bob Lemon for their work. And I'd also like to thank Linda Jefferson and the entire staff of the FPDNR for their service, and finally Shannon Callahan in my office for her service throughout, starting back in the 2006 process. I'm pleased to give the voters a chance to consider this amendment, and I'm pleased to vote aye. That, we stand adjourned, I believe, until Wednesday, August 22nd. Is that correct? Okay, our next meeting, Wednesday, August 22nd. We're adjourned.